Welcome to The Doctor Diaries, a podcast which will take you behind the scenes of the intriguing medical world. Join me, Hanya Rothersby, an experienced business consultant in the medical sphere, as I chat to our guests who will take us through their insights, experiences and ideas as an expert, thought leader and trailblazer in this exciting medical world. Welcome to The Doctor Diaries. Today, we have the privilege of speaking to Dr. Patricia Manaharan. Patricia obtained her doctorate in biostatistics and ecology, completed with the Centre of Excellence for Environmental Decisions at the University of Queensland. This amazing entrepreneurial woman has also been the Managing Director for Brisbane Skin, the Business Development Specialist for the Manaharan Group, and the Managing Director of Dermatology Clinics Australia. And we're going to refer to her today as, I've been referring to her for ages, as Trish. So Trish, welcome.
Thanks, Hanya. Thanks so much for inviting me today.
Oh, my pleasure. And have I covered off all of your roles? Have I missed any?
Look, we have a lot of things going on, I suppose, but that covers most of them. We also have, the other active one at the moment that we're actively growing and working on at the moment is dermatology education. That really ties well into our projects that we're working on.
Oh, look, working with so many dermatologists and being in that dermatology space for such a long time from a business consultancy perspective, I've been watching in awe the journey that you've been going through. So that's why I have invited you to the podcast today, because I would like to hear the story. Maybe take us right back to the beginning. So we've got Dr. Patricia Manaharan, PhD, candidate at the University of Queensland. So take us from there.
Yeah, sure. So I suppose from the beginning, obviously, I'm a marine biologist. So when I did my PhD at the University of Queensland with Professor Hugh Possingham, and Roland Pitcher as well from CSIRO, who I had worked with for a long time. That was after I'd been working in marine biology in various state and federal agencies for about 10 years and helping to manage some of the data collection from around the country and do some of the cancer research where they go and investigate some of the drugs that can come out of some of the marine animals. So that had come from a long, long time of being in marine biology and spending lots of time out in the ocean. And my frustration was that I didn't know what to do with that information that I'd been really integral in helping develop these fabulous data sets, some of the biggest data sets in the world. So that's when I went and thought, what am I going to do with all of this? I don't want to just hand it over to other people and not know, you know, what to do with it from then. And so I went to the University of Queensland. The Centre of Excellence was led by Hugh Possingham, who is now our chief scientist here in Queensland. And that experience, people say, oh, you don't have anything to do with marine biology anymore and, you know, that sort of thing. Even though your PhD was in that. And I say, you know, I learned so much during that time. And one of the things that really was left with me from that time, there are many, but one of the really important things was Hugh's really core belief that if you're going to do something, you need to make a difference. And so everything that everybody that was part of that Centre of Excellence was working towards was not just research for research's sake and because it was interesting. We were all together working towards something that would provide an outcome that would create change and better, whatever it was that we were working on, better outcomes for the future. Mm-hmm. And I think that really has stayed with me since then, that whatever I try and work on, I'm always thinking, oh, how can we do this that might make it work a little bit better or might give better access for people or those sorts of things. I think that's one of the fundamental things about the way that I approach things that's come from having done my PhD as well.
Yeah. And look, I think that attitude, that continual questioning, and the agility, it's obviously held you in good stead through your careers and your businesses. So I suppose those foundations were good for you. So you were able to collect and get data, understand that the measuring of things is so important, as we know that's really important in business, but also what does that mean and what can we change, which is really fascinating and I'm keen to hear more. So tell me, the next step then was moving into the world of dermatology.
Yeah, that's right. So I suppose I finished my PhD, and at that point, I was about to get married to my fabulous husband that you know well, who is a dermatologist, Dr. Shobhan Manoharan. And so we were moving into the space where we were looking at having children. And so I didn't want to, the obvious progression for me in marine biology was to go on and into academia. And do more research, take on students, that sort of thing. And I thought, if this is my plan to get married and have children, then I will want to be taking, you know, certain amounts of time off. And I don't think that's very fair to PhD students that I would have with me, or to the research that I would be trying to be doing. It would really hold people back if I was going to be taking significant amounts of time away. So I sort of stepped back for a moment and really took stock of, you know, what do we want personally in our future? And I think that everybody needs to operate from that first, because yes, family has to come first.
Agreed.
And so we took a little bit of time, and at that point, Shobhan owned Westside Dermatology, and I stepped in and did a little bit of help in terms of the management of that for a little while, and transitioned a new manager into that for them at the time. So that was my first taste of dermatology, I suppose, was through him with that dermatology practice, which had, you know, more than 10 or 12 dermatologists and was quite a big practice.
Wow, that is massive. Yeah.
So that was my first taste, and I thought all dermatology practices were like that. It isn't quite right. But, yeah, so from there, Shobhan and I decided to open Brisbane Skin, and he came and worked part-time there while I worked on the business side of that. And so that was, must be 7 years ago now. And, you know, as any person starting up a brand new business will tell you, the beginning can be quite lonely and quite rough as you're starting something from nothing, you know. It's but it's also very exciting, and you can make the decisions that you want to make to be able to do what you want to do when you're starting from nothing as well. So, you know, it's got both of those, both of those aspects to starting something from nothing.
Yeah. So, Trish, Brisbane Skin. So you guys started Brisbane Skin, which is very exciting. Tell me about that business. What was it all about?
Okay, sure. So we wanted to open practice where we would be able to see medical, surgical, and cosmetic dermatology, and have a really wide range of treatment options for people to be able to come in and make dermatology more accessible. So I guess we traveled internationally, and we'd seen, you know, in the States and in Europe, where people have a dermatologist, you know, oh yes, I went and saw my dermatologist, so they could name them, they went and saw them regularly. But in Australia, we even struggle now still, I think, with people even understanding what dermatologists do or what they are. And so that messaging here is a little bit different, and the understanding of the public is a little bit different. So, but the concerns are the same though, right? So we thought, how do we help make this more accessible to more people? And so that's where we did things a little bit differently, I suppose, and tried to approach it differently, where we had people able to come in more quickly. So obviously the waiting times were one factor that people, you know, don't take that step or can't take that step to come in because of the long waiting times. So we developed channels where we tried to help reduce some waiting times, for some things where we could, in order for people to be able to come in. The cost was the other factor. So people were, we found, were hesitant to pay to see a specialist when they didn't really know if they needed to see that specialist. And so then they would, you know, end up at the local beauty counter saying, what do you think? And that's probably not the right place to ask that question for some conditions. So we wanted to set up a pathway for people to be able to come in and ask over our counter, essentially. And so one of the things that worked very well for us and for our patients was that we had this completely free service where anyone could come in and ask any of our staff, am I in the right place? You know, should I even be here? Is something that you do? Am I overreacting? Is this, you know, all those questions that they have and they want to ask. So I think that really helped with accessibility. And then we were able to say, you know, oh, no, you can go and see your GP about that. Or, yes, you definitely need to see a specialist and I can fast track that for you. Or, you know, whatever those discussions might be. And not everybody does need to see a dermatologist about everything. And so we were able to help that level of service as well for them if they wanted to come and see us.
Oh, that's a brilliant model as well, because I think you hit the nail on the head, is that, you know, to seek advice over a beauty counter or at Dr. Google, really giving them accessibility for that triage, let's call it, that somebody with expert knowledge can say, yeah, you're in the right place. You still might have to wait 4 months, but that's what you need to do. Or, no need to wait 4 months. Why don't you go down this path, which is fantastic, which is really amazing. So that's the business that you sort of built up, and obviously was a huge success, because moving forward, that's the business that you sold.
It is, yeah. It was a so we sold that within, I think it was 5.5 years or something like that. So it was a very busy few years for us.
Yes.
And we tried all sorts of models. You know, some things worked and some things didn't. And you know, we had all sorts of things that we tried and we did through that practice. We had accredited registrar training positions that were accredited by the college, the dermatology college. We had non-accredited positions where we actually paid for people to for doctors to come and work there and have non-accredited positions. We had international medical graduates. We had people who were in med school coming and working there for some work experience, but also to work with us in different aspects of what we were doing. We did so much research, so many publications. We did so much public outreach and public education, as well as education for professionals that were dealing with us in that space as well. And then, of course, all of the training for the staff, because if you can't deliver something to a high quality and a repeatable quality, then you really have nothing to be able to move forward with. So we spend a lot of time on education with the staff as well. So we had people from all different stages and all different backgrounds and training doing all sorts of different service delivery with the ultimate goal of providing better access to patients and the public to dermatology services, some of which was to a dermatologist, and others were some of the supporting functions that could be done by others around that. So, you know, it was really exciting times for us, because we got to do all of those things, all the research and the training and the, you know, dissemination of knowledge and the patient focus groups and, you know, beauty decoded nights and, you know, all sorts of things. It was a really, really fun time. And so when we did sell, it was a hard decision for us, because we'd built it from nothing. And we had, I think at that point, we had 50 staff, 4 sites. And it was really big. It's what we did every day. It was very much part of my identity. And so that was, yeah, quite a difficult decision to make, but at the same time an easy one, because we had 2 small children, and you know, as I said before, family always comes first. So it was also easy for us, because whilst it wasn't what we had planned and it wasn't in the time frame that we had planned it, it kind of came at a nice time, because my daughter at that point, I think she was even less than 1 when we were approached, by those people that ultimately purchased us. And we were approached by numerous people over time. But yeah, she was probably about one, and we'd been through COVID, and she was a COVID baby as well. So all of the stresses of the business, as well as being very heavily pregnant during that time, made it extraordinarily stressful. So, you know, in our first child, we called our Manly practice, you know, Ryan's practice, because I opened that the day before I went in and had him. Oh. And so I was, you know, in the hospital on the phone doing calls. So, you know, from that aspect, it was an easy choice for us, because it had become this really huge, phenomenal business, yes, with so many staff and so many offerings, that we either needed to put different structures in around that to then cope with that growth, yes, and to allow it to grow more, or allow somebody else to do that. So that was the choice for us at the time.
No, look, well done you. You know, working with so many medical practices, the thought of you know, thinking about selling your practice is sort of counterintuitive, because you set up your practice to provide clinical services for patients and provide this centre of excellence and all those sorts of things. But then you need to start thinking commercially and go, oh, yes, a business, and somebody may be interested in and all those things. So, you know, I'm sure a lot of people listening to this particular podcast also would be fascinated to hear of, in that process, what you can tell us. What were the things that sort of really worked well in preparation for the sale? And now that it's gone through, should you ever have to do that again, what's some things you would have done earlier?
Save things in files and folders with a much more methodical and
systems. And I always talk about the system. Yeah.
If you ever need to find a piece of paper, if you ever go to sell, you need to find all your bits of paper. And if you haven't put them in folders where you know exactly where they are, it can be very time consuming.
You're laughing, but it's something as simple as that.
Yeah, so that would be the big time saver, I think.
Yeah. What do you think was the main thing that, you know, for somebody who was coming in to buy your practice, or of something that was valuable, what was the key items at your practice that made that an appealing practice to purchase?
Well, I guess you'd have to ask them that. But I would assume that the appealing things about our practice were that we were very reputable. So we had a very good name. We were quite well known across the country. And obviously Chauvin also has a really great reputation, and has been involved in a lot of training, both at the college level as well as at the student level and patient level. So I think there was a lot of good reputation with the people in the clinic and the clinic itself, that in terms of being good, safe operators, I suppose, yeah, and well-known space. So that, you know, is, I think, appealing to people when they come in. They want to know that what they're buying is reputable. And I suppose the other thing is that it's profitable, and that you can continue to have a good business going forward. So, you know, the reputation laid heavily on the dermatology side of things, and what we had built in the specialist space, and it being different to what was otherwise out there. And it wasn't the traditional dermatology practice model. We did quite a number of things a little bit differently. And I think that there was appeal in that being able to be continued as a profitable business as well. So I think the whole package together is what was of appeal, I suppose.
Yeah, fantastic. And obviously has been and was, but for those who are not experienced in selling their businesses, that doesn't have the sale and the walking out the door doesn't happen overnight. There's a period of time that you need to continue working on the business. So
yeah, I don't think anyone overnight either.
It's a baby, and you want to see it handed over in a nice way, which is good. Yeah,
that's right. So for me, I wanted good things and better things, and it was such a big company already that I think, you know, it's kind of like watching a child become a teenager and then knowing that, you know, potentially you don't have all those skills to take that to the next level right now, or have the time to take that to the next level, or, you know, whatever that might be in your particular circumstance, that sometimes letting that move on is the best thing for that company as well, you know.
Yeah.
So, there's a transition period for both of us, but that's very normal in any company. And we don't really want to leave. You know, still, I was there the other day. I love going there. I built that, and my heart and soul is in it, you know.
Oh, my goodness. Just to think that all that, those babies coming and businesses growing, and you probably just look back at that and go, how did I possibly manage all that?
It was very busy. But you know what? I loved it. And, you know, I'm a busy person, and we love doing things that, you know, we like being busy. We like doing things that are going to produce good outcomes. So, you know, yes, we were really busy, but we really loved it too.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And you're not there to sit back on your laurels either, because you're up to, you've got new projects, as I know, but I'd love for you to share with us where you guys are heading next and what's happening.
Yeah, great, absolutely. So I suppose for a few weeks after we sold, you go into a little bit of aftershock, I suppose, the fact that you're not running it anymore. And then I thought, right, what am I going to do next? I thought that I would really enjoy the time, and being able to have more time to think, and to be around my family and all that sort of thing. But turns out that, you know, after a few weeks, I thought, oh, what am I doing next? You know, what am I going to be doing? And one of the things that we had talked about many years ago was this concept that we've started now. And so we tossed around with a few ideas and thought, oh, this one actually we've been thinking and planning for quite some time about what a good idea this would be if anyone had the time to do it. And I thought, well, you know what, I do have the time to do it now. So we started Dermatology Clinics Australia. And so Dermatology Clinics Australia was born to provide, again, more people with access to dermatology. So same theme, nothing for us there. And we could take all of our learnings and try and do that more widely than we had been doing it so far. So we thought, you know, in Australia, we have, I think it's one dermatologist for every, I think it's 40,000 people in Australia, and there's no way that people can service that. You know, it's just too many people per practitioner, and on top of that, people are spread out all over the country, and so if they have to come in and see people regularly, or if they have to attend services regularly to address their concern, they just can't do it. It's just not practical. And so we found that even at Brisbane Skin, you know, people that would come to our North Lakes clinic wouldn't come down to our Newstead clinic multiple times. You know, they never came into the city. It was like living in a different space when you go up north, you live up north, and same with south and same with west. And so we thought, what if we could get, rather than doing the big clinic like we had at Newstead, if we could do lots of smaller clinics where we could then tap into the dermatologists that are in the city and be able to provide people close to home, all over the place, convenient to them, access to dermatology. And so that's what we're aiming to do.
Fantastic.
We have two clinics so far. We've been open about 6 months or 8 months now. At the moment, we're working on all of our processes and making sure all of our systems and processes are running smoothly, and that it works well, that the patients are happy, that things are running smoothly. And then we have the aim to roll out 30 over the next 3 to 5 years.
Oh, that's fantastic. Amazing.
Yeah, but a similar kind of approach, I suppose, where people will come in and see the staff there on site for free and say, "Am I in the right place? You know, can am I in the right place?" And so again, it's work. Patients love it because they don't. They've got that level of the financial barrier out of it to even understand if they should be going to a particular place. At the moment, we see three different conditions. We see eczema, psoriasis, and vitiligo. So we branded them Eczema Clinics Australia, Psoriasis Clinics Australia, and Vitiligo Clinics Australia, so that they're the patient-facing brands. They again know that they're in the right place to come for those treatments for those conditions. And then we tap into the dermatologists in the city via telehealth, which means that the dermatologists can be at home, and they can be reading at any time of the day or night, and get back to people within a week. So we have rapid access, fast turnaround, local support team that can liaise with the dermatologist with any questions patients have got. It's convenient. The results are then amazing. We've had so many fabulous stories already. You know, it's only been a bit over 6 months, and the patients are coming and just saying, "This has changed my life. You know, I'm so excited." And people that have been covered in plaques or had eczema all their life have finally taken that step and come in. And, you know, within 6 weeks, 8 weeks, you know, the life-changing results for these people have just been really heartwarming. So it's a heartwarming story, an exciting story about being able to make it more accessible for people. We're really
I could imagine. And your plan to sort of provide this, I'm assuming nationwide around Australia.
Yes, that's right.
Trish, that sounds amazing that you're really taking the concepts of what you learned in your early days of running businesses and saying, how can we make this scalable? I suppose really is what you're doing, which is fantastic. And so what in this sort of new model, what do you think's your greatest challenge at the moment?
Greatest challenge at the moment is taking it slowly. I don't like taking anything slowly, and I like everything done yesterday. And if you ask anybody I know, they'll tell you that's true. But I really think that in order to be able to do this properly, we need to make sure that our systems and processes are right and are complete, and that we get the feedback from patients, we get the feedback from the clinics, that we really hone everything to make sure that these clinics have everything that they can need and the patients have what everything they can need before we then go and open multiple clinics. Because I know that as soon as you open more sites, you have less and less time to be able to make sure that process is right.
And I think just you saying earlier, investing in time to get the systems right with your first few flagship clinics is absolutely the right pathway, which is fantastic. Well, I think this sounds amazing, and I'm just really excited to see how this all rolls out. And I've no doubt it will be a great success. Absolutely. So,
So we're quite excited about it. It's going to be something new, something innovative, and a great service. I think we're very excited to see this over the next few years ourselves, actually.
It will be. I suppose is internationally, is there something comparable, or is this something new completely?
Something new completely here for us. There are different telehealth models are done much more extensively in places like the States, for example. So they do have different models. It's different to what we're doing here, but it is that telehealth model to try and tap into, to try and connect the people that need the service wherever they may be. And with Australia, we're just so spread out. It's really crucial here. With the dermatologists who have, you know, all that specialist knowledge that they and care that they need to be able to access. So being able to try and bridge that gap between people is exciting to us. And I think it's also a nice way, you know, some people travel, you know, once a month or once every couple of months or whatever time period they can do into areas where there are not dermatologists at the moment, which is fabulous. But it's very tiring for those people that are doing that as well. And not everybody has the luxury of being able to do that. But everybody, I think, wants to, you know, and I think we all want to be able to reach out to as many people as we can. So if we can build something that facilitates and allows that to happen a little bit more, I think it'll just be a good thing.
It can only be a good thing, especially ultimately it's for the benefit of the patient. That's what it's all about, which is fantastic. Good on you. Well, congratulations. I think it's amazing. So we come to this part of the podcast where I like to call it the rapid fire questions. So three questions I like to ask. What business decision did you make that if you had your time again, you would handle differently?
I don't know, actually, because even the mistakes that I've made throughout my business life cycle, I suppose, my business journey, I've learned a lot from them. So I don't know that I wouldn't want to make them, because I think that every mistake that you make, really, if you sit back and reflect on it, you learn so much from that, and you learn much more from a mistake than you do from a book. So although they can be more costly, both emotionally and financially. But I don't think I would make any decisions differently, because even the wrong decisions that I've made have really influenced me a lot.
Good response. I like that. It's very good. Who inspires you?
So I suppose first and foremost, my husband inspires me. He works as hard as I do. He's as passionate as I am. And he's my rock. And so whenever we have any ideas or anything that I'm, you know, wondering anything about, he's definitely the person that I turn to first. And I know that the support and the guidance that he gives is, you know, just phenomenal and irreplaceable. So I guess that's probably where my inspiration first comes from. But there have been a lot of people in my life that have inspired me. My mother has been a single mother for a long time. My father died when I was quite young. And so I suppose the work ethic comes from her, because she had to raise a family on her own for a long time. And that's obviously very inspiring to watch somebody raise four children and work as hard as she has. And then different people through my life, obviously people like Hugh Possingham has had a huge influence on the way that I approach things in my working life, and the way that I approach managing people as well. He was a fabulous manager of his huge team of 100 students, very inspirational as well. So there have been lots of people throughout my life that have really inspired me to keep going, I guess, is what it comes down to in the end. People are excited about ideas and can get going on ideas, but you know, it's not over overnight. The people that you're surrounded with that inspire you to keep going, I think, and give you the right advice when you need it, are just invaluable.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. And if you've got those people around you, great. If not, seek them out. That would be definitely my advice as well. People who can inspire you and coach you in that way, it's fantastic. And finally, words of wisdom to your younger self, Trish.
I suppose if I was going to give my younger self some words of wisdom, it would be just to be true to yourself. Don't try and be anything other than you are. And to be honest and open about it, where I have a bit of a reputation of being very honest and upfront and open about things. And I think while sometimes that can land you in hot water, it's ultimately coming from a good place, and people know where they stand when they're around, you know. And so I think that honesty, both with other people and with yourself, will stand anybody in good stead, I think.
Yeah. Well, excellent. And thanks so much for your honesty on all those questions and reflections, which is amazing. So, Trish, I'd just like to thank you so much for investing so much of your valuable time with me today. Your story is so inspiring, and there's lots to be learnt. And you're going through the journey, but others watching going, wow, This is quite a phenomenal journey, which is just amazing. So thank you so much for your time today. And I am going to be watching with great interest in the next few years the journey of Dermatology Clinics Australia and how that evolves.
Oh, thank you so much, Hania, and thanks for having me today.
My pleasure. So thanks for joining us on the Doctor Diaries today, and more information about Trish and her clinics will be on our episode notes. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Doctor Diaries. You can find out more about our amazing guests on our website, haniaoversby.com.au, or join our Instagram page, Doctor Diaries Podcast, to find out more about our podcasts. We look forward to you joining us again.